You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
This week on the Famicom Dojo podcast, we answer your voicemail, email, and YouTube questions, and still have time to talk about future retro and our pile of shame. I know, we're pretty amazing.
Hello.
So I've been thinking, this is episode 106.
Ooh.
Which means it's been about 25 episodes since we restarted in 2014.
We restarted, but then we kind of stopped for a little while again.
Well, I mean, you know, we still had something going every week. Just about
okay.
every week.
Okay. Yeah, almost every week.
But yeah, we started this year with episode 81, so I guess this makes it the 26th episode. And, you know, every 25, we're supposed to do a gamer appreciation episode. However, we did one for episode 100, right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it was different. It was more of like, it was a contribution. It was more like a call for submissions. But yeah, we should probably clear out some of our mailbag.
Yeah, I feel like, I feel kind of bad because we have been getting voicemails since about mid-2013. And we weren't doing a lot of episodes last year. I think we did 13. Episodes last year, and we just never worked in these voicemails. So I think we should go back to that. But you also asked for some questions.
I did because, I mean, we get questions sporadically or whatever. But usually, what we do is I just answer them right on the podcast, the episode feeds, or on Facebook directly. But I thought it would be nice because, you know, other people might have the same questions or just it leads to something interesting to talk about. So I really think we should try again with the whole mailbag concept. You remember the first time we tried it, right?
Are you referring to video or audio
incarnations? I guess video is the first one. And this is way back episode 3.
Mm-hmm. And it was initially a fake mailbag segment.
yeah, because we were just trying to find a way to segue into the interruption from the old man.
Yes, that's a whole story by itself.
Yeah, that is. And,
you know what? Just buy the DVD. Buy the DVD. Listen to our
commentary on there, right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Anyway.
Good plug. Way to go. Yeah. I think we're done for the day.
Well, goodbye, everyone. No, wait, hold on. I got to find a way to spin something for Nintendo.
All right.
In the hopes that they're going to start being our sponsor for this podcast. Natural. I guess I should probably not criticize them as much if I really want that to happen. Nintendo, balls in your court. Okay, anyway. So you first came in, and I you knew this one was taken already, right? When you put it in the podcast, in the episode for a joke, when we called our first mailbag segment "Enquiry."
Yeah, that was a joke.
That's an old
IGN joke.
Yep.
old.
Back when it was like IGN 64 or something.
Mm. Yeah, it was n64.com originally, I think, and then IGN bought it. It's just very complicated.
Oh, crazy. Anyway.
It's just a clever pun. Clever play on words, and I enjoyed it.
Indeed. So, then we went, sorry, that's already been taken. I believe was the comment that came in. And then you're like, Dojo Mailbag. And we were like, okay, that's kind of a generic term. And then it was after the episode went out, right?
Right, yeah. Because I think we came back with episode 4, which was filmed months later, and as it turned out, it was already taken.
Yeah, was it Nintendojo or something?
I think something like that.
Something. I wonder if it's even around anymore. A lot of the Nintendo fan sites I used to read have gone under. I was really kind of surprised. I was going through some bookmarks that I imported from my old computer, like the sites I used to check, and it's like error, 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 or like been bought by some, I don't know, squatting site.
It's still there.
What?
Nintendojo.
Nintendojo? I'm sorry that I didn't know whether you existed or not, so I'll make up for it by plugging you right here. Nintendojo, it's still up.
There's this awesome weekend game on article with a Super Famicom styled Super Famicom and like Wii Remote graphic for it, and that's for 9/20/2014. So yeah, that's when not too long after recording this episode. For those of you who want to know how the sausage is made,
back in the days when the DS was new and I don't know late GameCube, early Wii and stuff, I used to go on Nintendo fan sites all the time because I don't know, I guess my loyalty was always kind of there, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, I used to go on tons of them, and I'm trying to remember some of the names. I went on a Planet GameCube quite often.
Oh, wow.
Which I switched to after Planet Dreamcast went away. And I used to go on, I'm trying to even remember what they were, but a lot of them have just gone away now, and that saddens me. And I mean, Four Color Rebellion right now is more of an indie scene site, but they used to be very Nintendo focused.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I'm still participating there, and we do try.
Yeah,
but
I like what they put up there. I enjoy it, but it's a very different flavor from when it started. So,
yeah, for sure.
But anyway, so we tried. We just had a couple joke ones, and then of course Denshi Mail.
Yeah, that one stuck.
It did, and
we never translated it to the podcast per se, though.
I think one of the reasons we never put it in the podcast was because we felt that we should keep those questions for Denshi Mail. But to answer something on the podcast is very, very easy. To answer something with a video is very hard. So I think we're going to stick with the questions that can be best answered visually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if someone's like, you know, how do you hook up this thing to this other thing? You know, we're not going to describe it. Because then we get words like this thing to this other thing.
Yeah, we actually started it because you know we were planning on moving into 16-bit stuff, and it's like, well, you know, we know yep. We didn't cover nearly the breadth and depth of the Famicom era, and so how do we keep talking about it? Because you know we knew people were asking us already that we hadn't answered, and so that's kind of how that came about. But then, you know, those fell by the wayside compared to the ones we wanted to work on. And, you know, we only have so much time for videos. And we really just should answer stuff in the podcast.
Oh, can I plug my show?
Yeah, plug your show.
Okay. We do this video series called Famicom Dojo as well.
I thought you meant your radio show.
No. Okay. We do this video series called Famicom Dojo as well. And I know we haven't had an episode. We haven't had an episode for a while. And one of the reasons for it was my video camera got destroyed by my kids a number of months back. So I could record only things from like my iPhone and stuff, which limited. And I was in the process of moving. Now I got the new house,
yeah.
which is a good background and a good place for me to film. And just this week, I got a new video camera. So
yes.
Expect new video content on the way there. Thank you for your patience.
Yes, we have a lot of stuff that's been in the pipe that I've been working on my end because I have had at least some time to do it, but we're just waiting to plug Ming's footage into some of those and others that we didn't even start because we wanted to do it all at once. Lots and lots of plans. Just need time and the resources, and at least we have one of those.
Yep. So... Oh, my new camera is really cool. I can control it with my iPhone. It's really neat.
What? I know it has Wi-Fi,
yeah.
But...
It has Wi-Fi. Yeah, I can control it with my iPhone, and I could actually record the video from the camera right to the iPhone if I run out of hard drive. And I can also hook an external hard drive right up to it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I basically have unlimited memory.
Awesome.
So, but the video it produces is... too good for my old computer. So I had to go and get a computer as well. So
that's okay.
Yeah, well, it's okay. It's okay it's now. And it'll be okay in 2 years when I'm done paying everything off. But
oh, baby.
But I'm sure it'll all balance out when that sweet, sweet YouTube money comes rolling in.
Or
the billions of hits we get on this.
You guys can go to, so we're, you know, part of the little podcast network now. Yes. And if you wanted to, you could go to their website and sponsor an episode of the podcast.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
They can sponsor us?
Yeah.
Do we have to do stuff for them?
Well, we are already doing stuff for them.
Oh.
This is an episode for October, right?
Yeah.
I think pretty soon we'll announce our plans for November.
Ooh.
Yeah. One of the things that we're going to be doing. So stay nice. Tuned.
Nice
little tease. An announcement about the announcement. I'm a politician already.
Well, if we want to announce about another announcement, there's probably something coming up in late December as well.
I actually am not sure I know what you're talking about.
I will be in the States.
Yes. So okay. All right.
Hopefully we can, we'll actually get some video, which has us both in the same time zone, rather than squandering it like we did last time. It was the only video content we actually recorded that actually went up, I believe, was the taste test for Pepsi flavored Cheetos.
We recorded. I liked that.
That's the only thing that went up.
But we also recorded some stuff for an episode that never got made, but I think we're going to incorporate it later. Well, we'll figure that one out. But there's also some footage we took at the House on the Rock that never yes. made it out either.
Yes.
So we need to
release funny stuff, funny too. Stuff. Funny stuff.
There are reasons, but you know, we'll get through all of it. But yes, we will take this time and do something awesome in the winter in Wisconsin.
Yeah. I mean, there's still stuff we recorded at Tokyo Game Show 2 years ago.
Three.
Was it 3 years?
Three.
Wow. Wow. No.
Yes.
Two.
What's year? 2014 minus 2011.
Yeah, but it. Yeah. Really? So yeah. The podcast is 3 years old.
Yeah, the podcast started that year. Episode 19, yep. I think. 18 or 19 was the first TGS one, yeah. We did three. We did like a preview, and then we did two at the actual show, and then released them over two more weeks.
Where is time going? But some of those are timeless because they're videos, not necessarily about any
right
game per se. So, look forward to new and archive footage coming up on our YouTube channel soon. And if you're not a subscriber, please be one.
Sweet. That's our youtube.com/FamicomDojo, just in case. All right. Well, let's get to our first bit of first question. This was on Facebook by, I am going to butcher your name because I'm sure it's like Norwegian or Swedish or some Scandinavian flavor.
Okay, go for it.
Is it right. Hjalmar Ekström? Ekström? There's an O with an umlaut.
You know, I would like to apologize to anyone outside of the United States or Japan because, for example, one of our contributions for the 100th episode, I credited one to Olek. That's not how to pronounce that name.
Oh, and
the more embarrassing thing is I still don't really know. But the more embarrassing thing is the first time I recorded that one, I wasn't paying close enough attention. I had to re-record it because the first time I credited him as Olaf. I think that's because I've been watching Frozen too many times with my kids. And I'm just like, wait, no, it's not Olaf, but Oh, man. Now I'm going to have to apologize for my apology.
Oh, geez. You know, it's okay. Well, I'm almost 100% certain his first name is Hjalmar.
Okay. Okay.
And he asks, will modern video game music ever become as memorable as the classic video game music classics?
Okay. Here, yeah. Let's listen to this. Do 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 do. What
that,
game?
That's Super Mario Brothers.
Okay. Dun dun da 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 da.
Legend of Zelda.
Yeah. Okay. Now, in any country, you know, these are probably going to be noticed. Now, I want you to hum a few bars from a game made within the last 5 years, and I'll try to guess what it is.
Sure, sure. Wait. I got this. Sorry, I'm trying to think of how the theme to Shovel Knight goes, and I loved it, but I can't.
This is kind of getting to the point, though. But okay. Shovel Knight is trying to recapture that style anyway.
Oh man! All right.
Of like the 8-bit chip tunes.
Wait, I got one.
Okay.
No.
I'm gonna say Mass Effect.
No, that's Battletoads. Pause music. Okay, oh. that's classic. That's still a retro game.
Yeah. Oh, it's back to me now.
How does the Mass Effect theme go? See that? Well, it's the orchestration. The you know that so that you, there's like no one clear melody line necessarily because there's just like 50 parts or something to the music. And
I gotta say, like, video game music now, a lot of it is very, 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 very good. And I mean, I adored the music that was in Mario Kart, new Mario. Although I guess a lot of that was remakes of old songs. But I mean, it's hard for game music to become memorable now because one of the things that was the reason video games music became so memorable is it was kind of limited. It was limited by the amount of songs one cartridge could hold.
Right.
But it was also limited by the fact that there was only so many instruments they could do at a time. And the melody lines were very clear and very easy to figure out. Now games are using like fully orchestrated stuff, you know. So the music is fantastic and it's good and it's moving and it fits the scenarios, but there's a lot of it. And there's less like the theme of the game, like the overworld theme or something, you know, the one that you've played this game, this level 1,000 times, 'cause you keep dying on it and you keep hearing the same.
That's
music.
A very good point.
You know, but right now the games are cinematic experiences, and if a quality sound design probably has very little repetition in it.
So that's very true. And not only that, but like, you know, there are people who like own and consume soundtracks.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, they're giving away like a Smash Brothers soundtrack if you buy both the 3DS and the Wii version of the game. It's a Club Nintendo thing. At least in the US, I think. But it's not a physical disc, I don't think. I don't remember exactly. But you know, even the people who own these soundtracks, I don't know if they could hum them. Just because they are so complicated.
They are. I mean, I would like to point this out right away. I don't mean that modern video game music is bad. Definitely not.
No, it's just not poppy. You know,
and it doesn't get in your head as much. The only notable exception I can think of from recent games I've played is Pikmin 3. The music for when a day ends and you're going up into the spaceship. Mm. Like, I can picture that very clearly in my head. It would be hard to hum, though, because it is a more complex thing. But,
oh, sure.
But, like, because it happened at the end of every day of the game, and it was repeated so many times, you know, I'll associate that song easily with Pikmin. But I mean, if you play a game from one of the newer Final Fantasy games or any JRPG in general, you know, it's probably going to be lavishly orchestrated, very nice, but I'd have a hard time placing it in a game unless I had purchased that soundtrack and was, you know, listening to it fairly regularly. Game soundtracks right now are fantastic, but maybe not as iconic.
Right, like you know, a good score, I think, like, you know, good special effects or, you know, good backdrops are like supposed to be not noticed, right? They're just supposed to enhance the main focus of whatever you're seeing. And you know, when you didn't have fantastic visuals, like back in the 8-bit day, you had to rely on them. You know, things have kind of shifted more towards, like I said, cinematic experience. But like an exception I will mention is Doctor Who. Okay. There are people. So I go to Reddit just to understand what this new eighth Doctor or is eighth. Sorry, eighth season. I meant to say the new 12th Doctor is saying
it's good. Have you been watching it?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad he's so.
I haven't watched this most recent episode.
Okay. Anyway.
But people not only like realize the different motifs that happen in this show, but they know the names of the songs, and I.
So
there's a bunch of people out there who like can pick out this stuff, probably know how it goes and could hum it for you, but I don't think it's like the general population.
In that song, like different characters had different themes when they came out. Mm-hmm. You know, like Rose had her own theme or whatever they would play. I couldn't tell you what it is off the top of my head. But like Mickey's Mousecapade, I know that the level goes you know, because some games that I played as a child, their music sticks in my head, or before a boss came out on Mega Man, like these little soundscapes are as much of anything of my memories of these games as anything else.
Well, like one of the things that really stuck in my mind about Out of This World, aka Another World, when I played it on the Super Nintendo, was the amazing score. And like I would just bust out in that song, something reminded me of it, and like, you know, Phil Bond would hear me say it, and like, I don't know what that is. But it's like, you know, I didn't play the game for maybe 20 years, and I still remembered it very well. And like, you know, the new game comes out, right? The 20th anniversary edition doesn't have any of that music because it's all licensed by Interplay. And what they replaced it with is similar, but I don't think it's as catchy, you know?
Completely. And, you know, the original game, the PC game, didn't have any background music at all.
Which is what I learned when the 20th anniversary edition came out and started researching it.
But I don't know, like, some more modern games that have memorable things, Shenmue's music.
I can picture.
Really?
It's been a while.
Like the Chinese violins playing the, kind of. Yeah. Oh my God, I might be mixing it up with something else. Anyway, I mean, it was a really, 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 really nice theme. Oh, by the way, is Shenmue like the original Shenmue? I know it was pretty overproduced and, you know, never sold through its original. Is it a game that can be gotten cheap these days?
Or is it
kind of expensive? Because I when I was moving all my stuff over, I found my copy of Shenmue, my English copy of Shenmue, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I wanna play this again, because I haven't played it since I moved to Japan. I played Shenmue 2.
Sure.
So I cracked it open, and discs 1 and 2 are missing.
Oh,
so I don't have them.
Let me find out.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that one's expensive. Any podcast listeners, if you know of a cheap copy of it, I'll trade you something for it. I'd really like to play that one again. And I mean, it's super cheap here in Japan, but I'd like to play the English version.
Okay, well, we should move on to the next one. We got a voicemail.
Let's do it.
Hi, this is Joshua Nichols, also known as Atomic Daikaiju, the 400th Twitter follower to Famicom Dojo. Sean, I just want to say thank you in advance for the DVD. Thank you again for the DVD that you're, I believe, sending off today. Completely unexpected, and I'm looking forward to watching it. To Vink, I would love to see this Intelliview content alone. So if you do decide to do a Kickstarter, I will happily fund it, because I was going to buy a DVD anyway. But Sean ruined that. Anyway, thanks guys, and keep on trucking.
All right, we will keep on trucking. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Okay, so I mean, this is an old one. This is from July of last year, and he mentions the 400th Twitter follower. We're up to like almost 550 now. So, Actually, number 500 was someone who followed us. Now, some Twitter followers, I mean, people have been doing some interesting things where they will follow you just to get noticed and hopefully you follow them back. And I never do.
Yep.
So like the 500th person who actually follows, I think was one of those people. And when I approached him to give him a free DVD, he's like, sure, great. And then I asked him for an address and he never sent me one. So then what happened was like someone, actually like right before that, someone had like, unsubscribed and someone else subscribed. And so, and so that person would have been 500, but then this other guy was the actual 500. So I gave the DVD to that person instead. So Sarah, you know who you are. Anywho, so this is number 400. I remember this pretty well. I didn't announce I was going to do it. You know, it just saw it. I was like, oh, here, give it out. And sent it up. You know, it took a little while because I was waiting to get some international order out. But
yeah,
because I think we just started doing it again. But I'm glad you like it. I know it's been like over a year since that's happened. But I hope you're looking forward to our next release, which I promise will happen.
And if you're thinking of joining us on Twitter, but waiting until we're getting close to 600, I don't think we're doing this anymore. So just follow us on Twitter and. The thing is, we will be doing some giveaways, and by being on Twitter, you'll know about that.
Yes, yes. We're gonna not just do it randomly like that. We're gonna do other random things.
Yeah. So don't sit there like, I'll join you on Twitter when it's 599. No. Just join now.
Then it'll never get there.
I know. It's exactly. So, as for the Satellaview stuff, I mean, Sean has it right now. Yep. I don't know. It's, I might just get another one.
Oh, jeez.
No, just an unboxed one, you know, the box ones are ridiculously expensive, but I just get something. So we each have one here and then, we can start looking for some content there.
Which is really difficult to do actually, because some of it was downloadable, you know, there's sound that you can't get anymore unless someone happened to have recorded it.
Yeah. And some of these things are crazy luck of the draw too. Like, there'll be game stores and they'll have Satellaview, memory packs.
Yep.
And, some of the better stores will have tested what's on them. So one will say like, this pack has Radical Dreamers on it right now. And that's a highly prized one. That's a sequel to Chrono Trigger. Yeah, it's a different type of game. It's more like a visual novel than anything else. But it is the official sequel to it, and it kind of is a lead into Chrono Cross, kind of. But anyway, or something like that. Again, I haven't played it, but that's one of the sought after ones. I mean, of the ones that the most sought after ones are the ones that haven't been dumped yet. ones that no one's ever transferred into a ROM or anything, and there still are some, and they'll turn up. I mean, these things, but the thing is, when you see some of them, sometimes there's no description at all, so you buy it and it might be nothing on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like buying Famicom Disk System games without labels. Right. You know, with labels. Some of them will be blank, but one like I came across had a Doki Doki Panic in it. So, not Doki Doki Panic. Sorry, All Night Nihon Mario.
Right.
So, I mean, you never really know. So, Satellaview is going to be a hard one to do too much of, but it's something I definitely want to get into, and we will definitely crack into that more.
All right. Our next mailbag is from David Szymanski, who you may remember from last episode. Went to Tokyo Game Show for us.
Yes.
And he asks, when is Sean going to get around to finishing Earthbound?
Ooh, good question.
How did that come up? I wasn't even in the conversation when you guys must have talked about that.
Once the podcast was done, we talked for like an hour and a half beyond that. So,
I had to go to a wedding.
Well, yeah. I mean, we were talking about game collecting. And I was talking about how I had like four boxed copies of Mother 2.
Oh, wow.
Because each one was like, I mean, I'm trying to get a complete, really good condition one. Because like one of them, like the cart is excellent, but the box is a little beat up. And one of them, the cart it has the labels a bit torn, but the box is nice. And one of them has a fold in the warranty card. So basically, I put the I'm putting them all together to create a really good copy. But I can't. But I still have the other ones like sitting around. It's just because I don't know. There's something about that game that I don't know. I want to own the soundtracks. I want to, you know. It's just such a magical game, and David is way bigger into the game than I am. He probably has every bit of merchandise ever connected to any of the Earthbound series.
Wow.
Like everything. Like
I seem to remember his house in the States being full of merchandise of all kinds.
Yeah. So he was telling me about like that he'd sometimes buy things he had no real interest in just because they were somehow connected to Earthbound, and I was saying I'd probably do the same thing just to support the series. And then he's like, "We should do a. You should. Have you guys done a podcast on Earthbound yet?" And I'm like, "Not yet. I don't think Sean's beat it yet."
Oh dear. Well, yeah. So in contrast, I did rent it once back in the day before I knew any of you guys, and either wasn't impressed or didn't have time. I don't remember what happened exactly, but you know, now I think we talked about it on the show a little bit when I was playing through it. But the last time I actually played it in earnest was around the time it was released for Wii U Virtual Console last year. Yeah. But I would
that was the same time I was playing it. Yeah.
Right. So I really only play it when I was doing other things because, like, you know, my time was limited. You know, I was still a relatively new father, and you know, so I would do multiple things at once. So in this case, I would stream Breaking Bad on my Xbox through Netflix, and then I would play on the Wii U gamepad at the same time. So, you know, needless to say, I was...
That is a terrible way to experience both of those very good things.
Oh, my goodness. No, I didn't do it all the time, but it was... I would definitely pause one to do the other and vice versa. So I didn't get very far sometimes. But I got, you know, just... I got to this part where the game takes this huge left turn, spoilers, and... played through that, and then, you know, when it got back to some normalization, I didn't pick it up again because I was done watching Breaking Bad. And there were other games that came out, you know, things supplanted it, and I got really busy. I think that's around the time I was moving, so that's really the real reason I put it down, because I didn't have my Wii U out for months for a while. Yeah. So there was this hard cutoff, and I just didn't get back into it yet. So I will. I'm playing through another game that was on my pile of shame that I want to get done. So this game's on my pile of shame too now as a result. And I will get back to it after I have moved this other one to Future Retro.
All right.
Cool. All right. Next voicemail.
Hey guys, my name is Brad Payne. Just wanted to let you know that one good game that LGN made was Spider-Man and Venom and Maximum Carnage. Great game. I still own it, both the emulation and I have the actual Blood Red cartridge. Bye.
All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm ready to announce Vink was wrong here. but I will say that I haven't played the game myself. I do remember the cartridge, though. I remember at the rental shop. I thought that was really, really cool. That it came on a red cartridge. Didn't Doom also come on a red cartridge or something?
Oh, I don't remember.
Some other game. But
it was enough to stand out for sure.
Oh yeah, but it definitely stood out. I still wonder what they did for that, because the cartridges were being produced by Nintendo itself back then, right? You know.
I think so.
I wonder how they contracted that one out.
Well, like the Killer Instinct one was black, you know, so I'm sure that there were ways. But I mean, you know, this came about because the episode we were talking about was we were like discussing Back to the Future and parts one and two and three. I think I just gotten a copy of Bill and Ted's Excellent Video Game Adventure.
Yep.
Did they only do time travel games? And I see on this list is Terminator 2.
And I think I made a comment of along the lines of LGN has never produced a good game.
Yeah.
And okay. That's I guess hyperbole. I mean, they very well may have, but
well, I don't know.
I haven't played it.
I'm looking at this list. So they like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. I remember liking the Karate Kid.
Okay, the Karate Kid was it had a two-player mode that was actually like a one-on-one fighter, like way back in the day. I wonder if it predates Street Fighter. I don't know. I mean, it does not predate Karate Champ, which was one of the first one-on-one
fighters. Which I love playing.
But I remember it being pretty fun. And I remember there was this one level where it was basically one of the other levels again, but this time there was a monsoon going on. So there was rain and like this very strange physic effects because you couldn't jump as far because the wind was blowing you back. Actually, that was kind of cool.
I think that was based on part two, actually, the movie.
Which, oh man, I gotta say if I had a movie pile of shame, it would be Karate Kid Part Two.
Oh, dude.
Because I'd watched Karate Kid a million times because it was on TV and I taped it when it was on TV. And I'd watched Karate Kid Part 3 a bunch of times because it was on TV and I taped it.
Why? Okay.
Wow, Karate Kid Part 3, he's really getting a gut by that movie. But anyway, and guilty pleasure, I like the next Karate Kid as well.
Oh, yeah, I thought that one was good.
Because it has monks that go bowling. But anyway.
Part two was like one of my favorites. Like you know, I think I might have mentioned, so like back in episode 100, I mentioned I like saw a lot of movies and played a lot of games that were sequels.
Yep.
I saw Karate Kid Part Two more than I ever saw Part One, and the way they depicted Japan made me want to go there. Like, it was no small influence on me.
It was, the thing is, a lot of people mentioned that actually. One of my friends mentioned that too, and I'd seen the movie in parts, you know, over the years when it was on television or something, but I don't think I'd ever watched it straight through until about 5 years ago.
Oh, geez.
And I watched through it and I had no idea that Glory of Love was from that movie.
Oh, right.
The song.
Oh, Chicago.
But anyway, I was like, dude, that Daniel-san, he's got a different girlfriend in every movie.
Right. Yeah. Had Elizabeth Shue, who apparently despite proving how shallow she wasn't, ended up running away with a football player. That was their excuse. But I think,
by the way, that tea ceremony that they did in that was totally wrong. As someone who actually does tea ceremony,
yeah, it's okay.
But anyway, watching that,
fun bit of trivia.
Yeah,
the opening scene that takes place right after the end of the first movie was actually filmed for the first movie.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't want to end it there, though. So it was a great lead-in for the second one. Anyway.
Yeah. This is a good move.
Man. Are there any games on this list? So Foo Fighters Roger Rabbit is on here. I'm not sure that's a feather in their cap.
I remember playing that and liking it, but I think very much like any LGN game, the amount of that you like a game that's made by LGN depends on how much you like the franchise that they are squandering.
And even then, so all right. I'm reading this off the wiki page right now.
Okay.
Which might explain some of why they're so inconsistent on this stuff. LGN was exclusively a video game publisher when it came to video games. Although many of LGN's titles, particularly the pre-acclaimed ones, did not disclose developers, there is no video game that has been developed in-house by LGN. So that explains a lot. We don't really know who developed a lot of these necessarily.
Oh.
I think I mentioned that Bill and Ted's was developed by a different studio or one of those games in a subsequent podcast. But so they turned out these movie licenses. This and like there's a whole bunch of like WWF games as well. I don't think they did anything original. It was all just.
Ugh,
basically what not Yacht Club Games, who am I thinking of? Basically what Way Forward does now, but like, you know, not sucking.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Probably what happened was I saw the blood red cartridge and I'm like, ooh, and then I saw the LGN logo and I'm like, pass.
Mm.
That's probably what happened back in the day. But you know what? I'll give it a try. If anybody has a copy of that game, feel free to send it to me. If not, maybe I'll pick it up when I'm back in the States in December.
All right, next question is from our friend Miles, whose last name I have never learned how to pronounce.
Okay.
What is it? Like, it's like Lobato? Lobato? How would I even say that? Miles, if you're listening, and I know you are,
I hope it's Roboto. I hope it's Lobato, because then it would rhyme with Roboto, and I could incorporate him into a Styx song. Domo arigato, read Lobato. But it's probably not.
All right. Well, he asks.
Domo arigato anyway. Okay.
He asks, who does your hair? And ooh. I think he's asking you, because you asked the question on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. Okay, who does my hair? Lots of different people, because I'm in Japan and I'm still trying to... As I gradually have less hair... Hey, watch. Watch between episode one and a recent episode. It's all migrating down to my back. much like other people... Much like senior citizens, as my hair gains in age, it wishes to move to more southern climes. Anyway, I used to go to a place called Shampoo. That was the name of the haircut place. It was basically like a chain haircut place, and they did an okay job, but just an okay job. There's so many stylists in Japan, so many salons all over the place. I'll go down in my city and one road will have like six or seven of them. It's ridiculous how many. And yet you go there and they're still full.
Wow.
So it's my guess that most Japanese people have their hair done every 17 minutes. because otherwise I have no idea how economics can even support having so many salons. But
right.
They're expensive. They're really, really expensive. There's a couple places that do a really, really good job with my hair, and they include like the scalp massage and everything, and hot towels and blah 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 blah. But you might pay like $40-$50 for a haircut, which is ridiculous.
Insane.
For that price, I could buy Smash Brothers.
Right. Just once, yes. Too. And
yeah,
and not have to do it every 17 minutes.
Exactly. How about you? When you were living in Japan, what did you do for a haircut?
Well, that's exactly what I was curious about your answer, because I for the longest time had like really long hair, like when I cut it a bit before I went to Japan and gave it to Locks of Love, but it was still like this weird like Tom Baker-esque fro thing, and especially in Japan it was very curly. But you know, after a couple of months, like it was just way too unwieldy to manage anymore, and I had to get it cut. And I decided to go with like a more traditional short haircut, especially because I was concerned that I wouldn't be able to communicate with anyone there enough to explain what I wanted. So I just basically like got a picture pointed to it, and then the guy went to town. And I've had something similar ever since. But I literally just like went to some place that was next to the Hyakuen shop in downtown Nagasaki. And I cannot remember the name of it or what I paid for it or what I even talked to the guy about. But I only went the one time because I only lived there for 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
So I never had to worry about it again. But yeah, that would be a point of concern for me. How do you get your hair cut in Japan when you're a foreigner? And mine's really like, you know, unlike a Japanese person, the typical Japanese person's, it's not straight and black. It's brown. Well, I guess the color doesn't matter, but it's very, very poofy in humid climates.
Well, yeah, and that's a problem with me too. Like when I get my hair cut taken there, I mean, people in Japan touch my hair all the time. Not just because it's a different color, but because it's just softer. They always tell me it's like baby's hair, and I'm like, okay. So I'm constantly being petted, which depends on the person. That can be a good thing. But anyway,
your wife listens to this podcast, you know.
Yeah, but she was mean to me in a previous one. Okay, anyway. A lot of the hairdressers, when a foreigner comes in, they're like, oh, what do we do? Because, you know, right. A lot of their training is based on the fact that the hair is a certain weight and it's going to hang a certain way, you know. So I've had some very bad haircuts in Japan just because people have cut it, too short, and it'll just stick up. I don't know. And because I'm incredibly lazy, like, they're like, your hair will be fine, just apply this wax to it like three times a day, and I'm like, I'll just wear a hat. So And now I wear hats. I've been into hats since Tokyo Game Show, actually.
Yeah, that was 3 years ago, by the way. And that was, I liked that hat.
Yeah, I still got that.
All right, last voicemail.
All right.
This one's a lot more recent. It's actually from this year, but it's still, like, you know, 7 months old.
Okay.
Hi, Sean and Vink. This is Jody. I'm calling because I had just watched your turtle tipping video on the Famicom Dojo channel, and I was wondering, like, do you, either of you know where the term turtle tipping originated? Like, I grew up in Chicago, and I had always called it that, and, like, everybody that I know called it that, but I don't know if this is just a Midwestern thing, or if it's something more widespread, and, like, where the name even came from to begin with. So if you guys could answer that on your podcast or wherever, that would be awesome. Bye.
So that's the Jody from 4CR, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Hey, Jody.
And he discussed maybe coming to see us when we did our Madison Underground show last year.
Yes, but, yes.
Because it was on a Sunday night, it was kind of hard to swing, even though he was coming up from Chicago.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question, because when we were doing that episode, we were originally going to call it the turtle tapping episode, until I found out everyone else calls it turtle tipping. And I was like, that's weird.
What did you call it when you were a kid?
I think I called it turtle tapping, too.
All right. Yeah, maybe that's a Wisconsin thing. I don't know, but yeah, I always learned that it was called turtle tapping, because I don't know, you're tapping the shell into the wall there to get the extra points. But tipping totally makes sense as well, because you're actually tipping the shell over. But in my mind, it'll always be the tapping, because tapping to me sounds like the action of, you know, repeatedly hitting that thing right against the wall. Whereas tipping is something you do just once to start the process.
And you think would be more appropriate in Wisconsin because of cow tipping.
Exactly. So, wow, you beat me to it. But yeah. So I don't know exactly. And that's the thing, though, is the fact that it spread enough that everybody knew about it at all is kind of remarkable, considering the internet back then was not very, I mean, it was non-graphical. Very few people had access to it. And even then, like, most of people accessing the internet at all were doing it through, like, bulletin board services and stuff. So I didn't know any kid who was on the internet back when I would have been using this term. So
right.
I think it's just was something spread from word of mouth. And since the two words sound so incredibly similar to each other, you know, one is probably just a misheard of the other.
Right.
But
I
mean, they both make enough sense that it works. But I'd have to look into some research a little bit. I was a subscriber to Nintendo Power, and I never saw this trick referred to in there. But already by the time Nintendo Power started, they were on Mario 2. So it might have just been too late into it. So if anybody has an old magazine or something around the time it came out, give it a check. And if anybody discovers something in print that either says tapping or tipping, I'd be really interested to see that. Also, they had a lot of those books out at the time called Video Game Secrets and stuff. I had a couple of them, but I don't recall it being referred to as either of those terms in the book. So, sorry, it's kind of a non-answer, but I'd say it really spread through word of mouth. And like many things, it's a little difficult to trace its origin unless we can locate a print source or something. But frankly, I think it was just from kid to kid to kid to kid.
If you want to be responsible, though, you research the term that's going to get you the highest number of clicks, and you name your video after that.
Yeah. So when we looked, we found that most people were calling it turtle tipping. So that's what we called it. Yeah. All right, let's do some future retro stuff.
Right on. So what is your future retro for this week?
My future retro is, I always have to preface all of them because I cheat so much with it. But Because this is a game that is already regarded as a retro classic, but I'm going to bring it up because I just want to talk about it. I downloaded from they had a sale on the Virtual Console last week, and I picked up Link to the Past again.
Oh, the Smash Brothers sale!
And I almost brought this up during our question about the music, but I put it on, and the Triforce coming into the scene in mode 7, you know, where it's like you know, that kind of epic opening music. I wish I could replicate it better with my voice, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
You know, and then even when you're just like putting in your name and it's like you know, the kind of like mystical, and I'm just, that brought me back more than the graphics, more than anything. And all of a sudden, I'm like 13 years old again, 12 years old. I don't remember when. The thing is, I think the last time I actually played that game, I was probably still in junior high school. So I think it's actually been 20 years since I've played that game. But it immediately came back to me. All the tricks, all where things are, you know, how to play everything. The graphics in my mind were better, you know what I mean? Because going from Zelda from the NES Zelda Link to the Past was a huge leap.
Oh, for sure.
And I remember being so incredibly impressed in that first scene where it's raining and there's lightning and everything like that. And I'm looking at it now, and I'm like, I'm looking at it now with like my 50-inch television, you know, where the pixels are the size of like, you know, they're just gigantic. Yeah. But it actually looks a lot better on the game pad, actually.
That's how
I've been playing it since then. But that game is just so incredibly good. And I downloaded it because I want to play it again, because I have forgotten a lot of the actual plot points and things, and I want to play it before doing A Link Between Worlds.
Okay.
Which I'm very much looking forward to playing.
The only thing I'll say about that is I feel like, to an extent, Link Between Worlds was created for those who hadn't played Link to the Past in a few decades.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I heard it was a fairly direct sequel. So.
Oh, it is. I mean, that's not an issue. It's just, I'll just let you play it.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a good game and I enjoy it. I don't want to imply otherwise, but yeah, you just go ahead and play it.
So, I mean, I'm not removing anything from my pile of shame because I have beat this game before, but I don't know. Like, it's games like this that are the reason I'm still playing video games.
Right. Oh, I love that game a lot too.
And if anyone if any of the younger people on here who are Zelda fans haven't played it because maybe your first one was Ocarina of Time or something, go back and get it. It's, you know, you can get the cartridge if you have original hardware, or Virtual Console it's great. And I love being able to just save state anywhere. That's so nice.
Oh, definitely.
You know. For people like me and off TV play and stuff like that. But however you go about getting it, if you haven't played this game, you really owe it to yourself to do it. The price is right, and I think you're going to have a lot more fun with it than most of anything made these days. So that's mine. Awesome. How about you?
Mine's a little weird. I actually played this game last year, and I keep meaning to talk about it, but it gets superseded by other games I've been playing more recently.
Okay.
It is a minimalist text adventure, if I may use the term loosely, by Doublespeak Games, called A Dark Room, and you can just play it online right in your web browser.
Is it like Get Ye Flask?
Sort of. I mean, so literally,
that's a strong bad reference.
Yeah.
Can we link that? Oh my gosh, okay. That's such a good episode. The one where he's talking about the old retro games. Okay, we'll link that. Okay,
Can you even do a direct link to strong bad episodes?
We can link. I think so. I think we can link to. I think we can link to an episode page. Yeah, I think so. If not, we'll just include some instructions to go to Strong Bad Emails and click video games.
Sure. So I use the term text adventure loosely because it's not really a text adventure. It's
wait.
It's difficult. It's like it's inspired by text adventures more like. So there's initially there's a location. There's like a stream on the left of actions that you've taken or, you know, things that have happened. It just starts with, you know, you're in a dark room. There's a fire that's out and you have one action.
Okay.
And it's to light the fire.
Okay.
And it's the only action you have. And if you've like played like MMOs or similar games, there's a refresh period and you'll watch, like, it looks like a regular button, but then, like, you know, this bar will kind of slowly go down until you're able to push it again. And then as you do this, then like a stranger comes and warms up by the fire and you can't do anything but push this button at this point.
Okay.
And then the story kind of progresses from there. And then this person finally gets warm, is able to talk to you and says things. And, you know, this is all going on in your like left side of text. And then as it goes towards the bottom, it slowly like fades out into the white background. So you're only seeing text at this point, but it's definitely written in like jQuery and there's like a lot of effects going on. But everything is more or less text-based. And then you get to go to a new area after a certain point and you get more actions and then you kind of build, it becomes like a resource gathering game all of a sudden. And then the purpose of it is really, really interesting. I don't want to spoil much more of it than what I'm saying, but, it's definitely in a minimalist style. And it reminds me of the really good text adventures. There is some graphics in a sense. You get a map eventually. But most of what happens is text based that you read, as things are going by, but it reminds me of those classic, text adventures, but improves upon them in the way that your actions are like always on the screen. You always know when you can do them. They are timed. So it takes you probably a few hours to finish this game just because you have to wait to get enough resources at some point.
Does it have unwinnable scenarios?
No.
Then it's not a real text adventure.
you can die. But you just get like a resource penalty as a result. And then you just kind of keep going. Like if you have inventory items, you'll just drop them and then you have to start over.
Do you have to remember to feed the dog at the beginning?
No, that's the Hitler's Guide to the Galaxy reference, by the way, for those who are curious. No. But it's, you know, it's like I said, it's more inspired by text adventures. It isn't really a true one because, you know, you use your mouse. You don't ever. There are graphical cues. It just looks like a text adventure game. But the sense I got when I played it, which reminded me of those games, was like, you know, you literally like there's the whole dark room thing is like a trope from that time.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Most of them started in a dark dungeon or a jail cell or a dark room. Yeah.
And like from that like singularity, like the whole kind of possibility space expands. And then the more you play the game, the more it kind of shrinks. But like in this case, I feel like the story of what's happening just kind of gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And like your imagination is constantly being challenged and your interest is piqued. And when you finish it, I'm not disappointed. Like it was so much fun. I actually had to like leave it running for a day while I was at work so that I can get enough resources to play because I was so entranced by it, but I was spending too much time with it. So this game kind of like retunes the definition of future retro for me, kind of the way that Shovel Knight did, where it's a game made in the future in a retro style, but improved on all the things we complained about retro stuff. It's kind of like a game that was made that we remember retro being, but never actually was.
And I really
enjoy it. Anyone can play it right now for free on their website, and I recommend you go do that.
Freebie this time.
Yeah, it's just a web-based game.
Oh, link that up. Totally, yep, link that.
Definitely. Okay, it's just great. darkroom.doublespeakgames.com.
Cool. That's good. How about Pile of Shame?
I had an interesting experience recently. I decided I wanted to get component cables for my PS2.
Okay.
This was prompted because I had when I finally got my man cave together, I had my PS2 out again and it had been out, but it wasn't hooked up for like maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
And so I finally hooked it up and I popped in Shadow of the Colossus determined to get off my Pile of Shame. And I noticed that there was, both a widescreen option and, a progressive scan option. And that has been in the back of my mind for a while. Then I looked up the cost of component cables, and it's like $5 for some off-brand. So I'm like, great, I'm going to do that.
There were a couple other games that did that too, like God of War 2 and I think
Gran Turismo 2, I think.
Yeah.
There are actually some games that can do HD, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, a few of them could.
I ordered it off Amazon, and it came a few days later, and thanks to Amazon Prime, it was free shipping. Great, great stuff. And I had a hell of a time hooking this thing up. And in the meantime, I have been thinking to myself, I really want to play Shadow of Destiny again. And this is the game I kind of wanted to talk more about, because this is one where you can have multiple endings. But it's done in a way that all of it pieces together a part of the story. And even the beginning of the game explains to you that, you know, in the world of this game, every choice you make, like that version of you exists, even if you didn't make that choice. So in a way, all these things exist simultaneously, and you can get to each of these endings based on the choices you make. And despite that, the voice acting isn't great in some places. Like the guy who plays Ike sounds like he's a robot. Sorry, guy whose name I don't know. it was a really fun game that like piqued my interest, and it's even available on PSP, I believe. They did a re-release about 5 years ago. You can play it in a more recent platform, but I was very curious to play both this and Shadow of the Colossus on my component cables.
Mm.
So I hooked them up, got nothing on my TV. Weird. Okay, so I went back to composite, no problem there. Found there was an option to turn on the component colors. Because if it's just on the RGB, it won't even output onto those cables.
Oh, okay. All right,
tried that. Nothing. Turns out that the PS2 and PS3 do not play well with Samsung televisions.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. So I hooked it up
Samsung is the main rival for Sony
television. Oh, geez. Yeah. Okay. Well, I hooked it up to my monitor, my computer monitor, which is also has, you know, component inputs, and it worked fine there, with the exception that one of the colors didn't seem like it was coming through, and I think it might be these cables. I've heard people talk about connections not being very tight, and so one of the pins might not be lining up quite right. So I'm going to try with someone else's PS2 or with another cable in the future here. But in Shadow of Destiny's case in particular, I was all excited, you know, because every game should still work through it, even if they don't have a specific mode to take advantage of the cables. Comes up, menu looks great. I think all the blue is missing from it, but, you know, it looks pretty crisp and clear. Yeah. I go to load the game, mode unsupported. Apparently, Shadow of Destiny is one of the only games that does not work over the component cables whatsoever.
That's kind of funny. That is kind of funny.
So, but it's not my pile of shame, but
I used to hook my Wii up to my old CRT using D-Link.
Oh, wow. How do you even do that?
Well, most Japanese televisions have it.
Well, it's like an adapter in Japan that lets you do that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And interestingly enough, in Japan, component cables are pretty rare. In fact, I think component and D-Link are kind of a similar technology, just with different adapter heads.
Okay.
And it looked great. But when I hook it up to my HD TV with D-Link, actually, the extra crispness makes it look crappier.
Oh, no.
So I usually hook it up just with regular composite. Because actually adding a little bit of blurriness makes it seem less jagged.
Because they didn't do a lot of anti-aliasing.
Back
in the day.
But Mario Galaxy looked terrible with D-Link because it was so crisp. Mm. Like the planets that look round.
Oh.
I hooked it up with my CRT or compose that you can actually see the edges and it was incredibly off-putting to me. So I actually switched it to a worse format. But when I hooked through D-Link to my, that's how I have my, Xbox 360 hooked up. I do through D-Link. So
okay.
It looks great. But the Wii, fantastic on a CRT. Probably the best way you can hook up, in Japan at least, the Wii to anything. But to a modern television, kind of yucky. Okay. My pile of shame is Valkyria Chronicles 2. I hope I'm saying that right. Valkyria. That's how I usually
Yeah, I think that's right.
And this is a kind of surprising one, because anybody who's listened to our podcast for a while knows that the original PlayStation 3 game is one of my favorite games ever made. It's made by the Sakura Tyson team. It's just a wonderful game. I haven't really ever been into the war games too much, but it was just wonderful. Great characters, some nice cameos from Skies of Arcadia. Just overall one of the best games. It's the reason I bought a PlayStation 3, and still really one of the only games that I really feel was a killer app for me for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had the second one for PSP for a number of years now, and I haven't even popped it in. Now, why? It would be a very good question to ask. For the first one, I was very disappointed that it went to portables, because the PlayStation 3 version of the first game is absolutely beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's just wonderfully done, and you can't really replicate that. It kind of looked almost like paint. Some scenes almost looked hand painted. It was a beautiful game, and by putting it to the portable, they tried to recreate that style, but it's, you know, the videos I watched, it just wasn't as good. Second of all, the second game did a bit of a genre switch and made it more of, like, it's set in a school now, you know.
Okay.
Instead of this, like, and I mean, I'm sure that can be very fun if the characters are good and the battle's still good, which I've heard they are.
Okay.
But I also heard that it is weaker than the first entry, the sequel, but that the third entry is fantastic. And that's what gets me, because it's a trilogy, okay? These games are a trilogy, and the third one will never be localized. Because the PSP is just not viable here. I mean, the series never did gangbusters in America to begin with, but by the time the third one was out, the PSP was pretty much dead in America. It was still viable in Japan. So nobody brought it over, and at this point, nobody will. Because PSP is, I think they're done now. I mean, I don't think anything is being released for it now.
Right.
And even Vita, which can emulate through PSN a lot of the Vita games, you know, not all of them, but I just don't think anybody's going to put the effort through. And I know there's a fan translation going on now that I think is done or almost done, but that involves modding, and that involves, I don't know, probably piracy, you know. I mean, I can buy the original Japanese game, yes, but it's not like a patch. I mean, it's going to have to be an ISO, you know. I mean, I don't know. It's a lot of trouble, and I don't know. So if you're listening to this, Sega, I would love the trilogy of those games. If you put it out on Vita, which can probably play it, because it would be able to play the first one fairly well, and the second two, you wouldn't even have to enhance them at all. Release a trilogy box of them, and I will buy a Vita, or do it in HD, do an HD remaster, and I will buy a PlayStation 4. It's as simple as that. I bought a PlayStation 3 so I could play the first one. I'll buy whatever new hardware so I can play the second two. There.
Wow.
That's my pile of shame.
I think you have a good excuse, sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
Sort of.
It's better than my Gekita and Saibon excuse.
Yeah, it's true. Well, all right. I think that is for real. I have heard this episode, but we're going to answer that next question next week. And
and new questions too. Yeah.
Yeah, and new ones. So thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, the dojo is
awaiting your questions. Send them in. Send them in. Questions, voicemail, bring them all in.
Oh, and if you also have more men or and or women caves to show us, please do. We've already gotten a couple of those.
Those are so great. Those are so great. I would love to do a little archive. That would be cool. But yeah, show us where you game. In fact, if it's not very good, that's even better. Like I would like to see that your man cave is a small closet area like mine.
Mine is a mess right now. I refuse to show it to anyone, even my wife.
but it takes up like half of your house.
That's true.
You can't go in this part of the house. And my daughter, I have to. My daughters just absolutely love just digging through the games in mine. And so I have to lock
it.
That's
my son.
I have to lock it when I'm not here right now. But someday this will all be yours. Anyway, sounds great. Okay, talk to you next time.
Famicom Dojo.
If you enjoyed this episode, please visit our show notes at famicomdojo.tv and leave a comment. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or our RSS feed. Rate and leave a comment on our free iTunes storefront, or call us at 608-492-1923 to share your thoughts. Follow Famicom Dojo on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube to train your game. And visit littlepodcast.com to sponsor an episode, sign up for a free Audible trial, or listen to any of the other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.